Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short. Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the 2008 NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
Welcome inside the playbook for week number one here in our 2008 season. Day number two, I'm John Rook. Mike Parenti from Patriots Football Weekly is kind enough to hang around for the first hour of the program today. So make sure you keep the emails coming. Webradio@patriots.com. Again, the email address is webradio@patriots.com. Now, a couple of things business-wise wanted to take care of here, at least at the outset of the show today. Patriots, of course, did re-sign quarterback Matt Gutierrez. They also signed punter Tom Malone to the practice squad. Gutierrez, let's see, originally signed by the Patriots as the rookie free agent out of Idaho State back in May of 07. He played in 5 games for the Patriots as a rookie last year, did complete 1 pass for 15 yards, was released as one of the final cuts this year on August the 30th in the final round of cuts. Mike, let me ask you, at least right off the top, I think this was the move that most people expected the Patriots to make if they were going to make a move at quarterback. Are you at all surprised they decided to go this direction?
No, not really, John, because I don't see any of the veterans that are out there right now being capable of coming in and making any sort of immediate impact. And I think right now you look at the guys who are out there, Tim Rattay, Chris Sims, some rumors about Dante Culpepper and others. But you know something, John? Those guys don't know the system. Those guys don't have the background Castle has. He's been here for 4 years, played in all the preseason games, took all the snaps that Tom Brady did not take, including some on the practice field as well. So I think there's a little bit more chemistry with Castle and the teammates that he has now than you could do bringing somebody else in. So you're bringing somebody else right now. What kind of impact is that going to make? I think Castle's the better quarterback than all three of those guys we talked about.
Yeah, absolutely. And just because of the fact that you know, you're so well-versed in what is it? I guess everything that the Patriots have got going on in the locker room and in the playbook and such, to me, that certainly doesn't make one bit of a surprise that they decided to go that route. Okay, now, some other news around the NFL today that I wanted to touch on briefly, because the Patriots obviously are not the only team that has been besieged by a major injury this early stage of the game, and it'll kind of lead me into where I was going to at least start off the program today. Number one, Sean Merriman has decided the better of his, I guess, desire to continue to play with 2 torn ligaments in his knee. And Sean Merriman is now going to put it up. He's going to shelve himself and have surgery, and he will be gone from the San Diego Chargers defense for the rest of the year. Now, Mike, I would ask, which loss is more crucial to which team? Merriman to the Chargers or Brady to the Patriots?
Oh, Brady easily. There's no question about it. I mean, Brady is the heart and soul of this team. Offensively, he touches the ball in every snap. He runs the entire show. Merriman's a fine defensive player, one of the best pass rushers in the game, but you still have your offense intact on the other side. You have your team leader in Phillip Rivers at quarterback. You have other defensive players. I think losing one pass rusher at one end is not equal to losing your starting quarterback. I can't really see any comparison there whatsoever. I mean, losing Brady, here's a guy who's the best player in football, probably one of the top 5. I'm not sure Merriman's a top 5 in the league. He's probably top 15 in terms of impact.
Oh, but I don't know about
the Chargers losing LaDainian Tomlinson would be a bigger impact than losing Sean Merriman at this point.
Possibly. However, I still think he's probably considered, he's still got to be considered a top 5 or 6, I would think, linebackers in the NFL when he is healthy. And I ask that only because they lost their game. They're 0-1. They were simply thought of as a potential Super Bowl contender, along with the Patriots and obviously the other contenders, the Colts and such, maybe even the Jags in the AFC. So when you take a huge part of your defense out, like the Patriots have had a huge part of their offense removed, the Patriots feel like they've got enough built up around Tom Brady, I would think, to still be somewhat effective offensively. And we spent the last couple of days talking about this, how Matt Castle, all he has to do is just remain efficient, not hurt the team, don't turn the ball over, don't try to do anything spectacular, just manage the situation. Whereas the Chargers, not having a playmaker defensively and a guy like Merriman to back him up, do they have enough around him to where this could end up being, I think, a more crucial loss.
Well, the thing with the Chargers losing the first game, it was a fluky play. They lost on the last throw from Delhomme in the fourth quarter with time running out. I still think, and even the Colts losing in week one, you wake up the next morning, who's better off right now, Colts and Chargers or the Patriots? You know, because the Colts going forward still have Peyton Manning. They still all their weapons. The Chargers still have their big weapons. Now, losing Merriman obviously is big, and I don't want to overstate that and how important that is. But Tom Brady is the reigning league MVP. And this is a player, and putting in Castle, yeah, he can manage the game to some degree, but there are going to be times late in the fourth quarter where they may need him to win a game. And I don't know if he can do that just yet. We have never seen it. He's never had the opportunity to do so. So until he does get it, we really have to reserve our judgment there. But we do know Brady can win a lot of games. And you know something? Even when Brady came in 2001, he was a game manager, but he also won games down the stretch. He engineered the last drive in the Super Bowl to get the team in field goal range. And those are some of the things that Matt Castle might have to do, because I expect this team now, without Brady, to have to play a lot more closer games than they did in the past. There aren't going to be that many 52-0 games like we saw last year.
Yep, that's
so
true.
He's going to have to be able to engineer some big drives in the fourth quarter and the second half. You know, and the jury's out right now on that, if he can actually handle that responsibility.
That's true. The other injury I wanted to touch on briefly is Vince Young for the Titans, who has a sprained MCL. He's going to miss anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks for Tennessee. And obviously, he's had the whole mental issue to have to deal with. His mother was quoted in the Tennessee newspapers as saying today that he's hurting inside, and that, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, but that he can use, you know, prayer from people. And you have to wonder, when a mom speaks out on behalf of her child, certainly most moms will defend their children to any degree. But in this case, in the NFL, you don't see this all that often. So I wonder if that has any special significance in lending any credence to the fact that maybe Young is having some depression issues.
That's a real touchy subject. I'm not sure what the hell's going on out there in Tennessee.
No,
it's, and that's scary. You kind of, you know, something, you look at it, this situation here, and you sort of, you're down on it if you're a Patriot fan, but, you know, it could be a whole lot worse. You could have your quarterback leaving his house in a huff without a cell phone and people not knowing his whereabouts and all this talk about depression. Yeah, I wish the best for Vince Young. I really hope that's nothing serious. And, you know, going forward for the Titans, that's big too, because we don't know what his mental state is right now. And I think a lot of people looked at Tennessee, you know, as one of the maybe playoff contenders in the AFC. I'm not so certain. I think they're a strong defensive team, and we saw them in week one win on defense and purely on defense. But without Vince Young for the better part of the season, if he does not come back, you knock them down a peg too.
Also wanted to mention that just coming out a short while ago, that the Saints have lost receiver Marcus Colston. He's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks. He's going to have surgery to repair a torn ligament in his left thumb. So this kind of leads me into some of the things that I was going to lead off with today, and injuries in particular. The fact is that we've been talking, especially in light, Mike, over the fact that the Patriots had such a miserable preseason, for obvious reasons. They had a mission in mind, and whether they accomplished it or not, maybe we'll never really entirely know. Fact is, though, is that to watch, it wasn't very good football. And it still, I think, adds fuel to the fire in terms of trying to shorten the current preseason situation, the setup that we have from the four games that are on the schedule. Several people have said now, in light of the major injuries that we've had through the first week of the regular season, there is no way, no how, that the preseason can ever be shortened. Do you agree or disagree with that?
I think it shouldn't be shortened, but I don't think it's for that reason, because of injuries, because that can happen regardless of how many preseason games you play. I don't think Tom Brady's injury had anything to do with the fact that he didn't play in the preseason. It was a fluke occurrence. A guy dove into his leg, and he tore his ACL, reportedly. So that has nothing to do with it. If Brady had started four preseason games, he could have suffered that same exact injury. A lot of those injuries are not dependent on how much a guy played in the preseason or how little a guy played in the preseason. My biggest concern, and Bill Belichick talked about this at some point during camp when asked about it, he says, when are you going to develop young players?
Right.
How do you develop young players without preseason games? You don't have enough time to get them up to speed. You can simulate things in practice, or at least you can try to, but it's not quite the same. And I agree with him on that point. I think you have to have those games and those legitimate snaps in something that slightly resembles an NFL game to get a guy up to speed, because a lot of the rookies that come in now are expected to contribute right away, and particularly a guy like a Gerard Mayo. Without four preseason games, where would Mayo be right now in week one and week two? He would still be in preseason form. and you don't really get the real Gerard Mayo till week three or week four. So if you want a guy at his best right away, he needs the time. And if you take away preseason games, when's he going to find that time?
Well, here's what I think has always been, to me, the logical conclusion to trying to solve this problem, if you will, of preseason football. I thought maybe you could shorten it to three games and add an extra regular season game. Obviously, that would make an unbalanced schedule, and some years you'd have nine home games, other years you'd have eight, and I understand that. That may still be, to me, the most viable way to go. But Peter King from Sports Illustrated had an interesting scenario that actually may also be a little have some validity to it. The bottom line is, though, is that no matter what happens, we're still going to have 20 dates where people will be invited in to watch because of the money factor. The owners are not going to give up the gravy train, and that's what preseason is. People forget that players aren't paid their salaries until week one of the regular season. They're paid a stipend to get them through training camp. Therefore, the margin of return for the ownership in the NFL is huge. There's no way they're giving that up. They might give one game back, but they're not going to give them up to the point where we're going to shorten the preseason to like two games. Now, Peter King has said, let's do two preseason games and then two scrimmages with other teams in neutral sites where you don't sell tickets. That will never happen,
never happen.
Because of the money factor.
No. That's the overriding factor in everything is money. And that's the biggest problem, too, when you look forward into ticket prices with preseason games. They want to talk about reducing ticket prices. Well, the league says, well, you know what? We need the same amount of money to put the show on. So how can we charge less for ticket prices?
Well, I don't think that's entirely truthful, Mike.
I don't think it is either. I think that's just their justification for it. So in other words, right. If they're coming up with something for this now, they will have an excuse for something else down the road in terms of why they can't reduce prices or why they can't shorten the preseason. It's all going to come back to money at some point. I don't really see it happening. And to be honest with you, I don't know if there's a big difference between three preseason games and 17 regular season.
It would just force
you're
teams,
still playing.
I think, to do. It would force teams, and I think, to making harder decisions sometimes on the younger players without one extra game. But we saw this year, I mean, four preseason games, and the Patriots made a mockery of the preseason. They just did. It was awful. And the fact that they sold full-price tickets for those games, what else can I say? It was terrible. It was terrible to watch.
Well, it was terrible based on how they played. I don't know if anybody treated it any differently than they did. I think they came out and they ran their plays and they just didn't look good doing it. That to me is the bottom line. And a big part of it was not having Tom Brady. You had Matt Castle and you had Matt Gutierrez and you had Kevin O'Connell taking snaps for four games. Your offense is going to look a little less than spectacular. But if I'm a fan, I mean, but John, but at this point now, don't come to these games. Don't pay the prices. just don't do it. I hate to tell people to stay home and not buy tickets, but I mean, in all honesty, I'm a New York Giants fan. If I had a chance to go to a New York Giants preseason game, I'm not going. I'm not spending the money on the tickets.
Well, those are usually the games, I think, at least for Patriots fans that I know, that they end up giving up their preseason tickets to other people.
And I don't blame them. The games aren't fun to watch, and you know that now. And we've seen it years ago. I remember the one year, and I'm not sure exactly which season it was, but it was the last preseason game, and nobody played. And people were pissed off. What do you expect? You know this is going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, the element of surprise, and I hear people emailing shows all the time, and they've emailed this show plenty of times. They emailed PFW in Progress complaining about having to pay this price for the preseason. I mean, you know what you're getting into.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
You should know anyway by now.
You should by now, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, kind of leading into what I was going to do for a question of the day here has to do with not so much the preseason but with the injury situation because, frankly, that's why a lot of the preseason talk is coming up because of the injuries early on, as I mentioned beforehand. Maybe we should or should not, in this case, shorten the preseason. I don't know if anybody's seen the polls on the Sports Nation page on ESPN.com, but they're very interesting. And, of course, I'll send everybody off to see that. But if you don't have to rush away from Patriots.com here because I'm getting ready to kind of go through it for you. The one question that really kind of intrigued me was, will the Patriots make the playoffs now that Tom Brady is out for the season? 55% of the respondents of more than 51,000 total votes right now, 55% say the Patriots will not make the playoffs. That is the perception that is out there right now about a Brady-less New England. I'm a little surprised by that, Mike.
I'm surprised it's actually that low, to be honest with you.
I thought it would be more.
Yeah, I really do. I thought a lot of people would, because all we ever hear over the course of time, in the last 5-6 years, is this team is screwed if Brady goes down. Now Brady's going down, and there are 45% of the people still think they're going to make the playoffs. So that doesn't, to me, indicate. I always thought it was overwhelming among not only New England fans, but just fans nationwide. I always thought there was an overwhelming premise that if Brady went down, this team could not win. And now we're here, well, you know, if they can do this, they can do that, and maybe Castle's not that bad. I think when the reality hits, you try to find ways to justify and maybe find ways that it's going to work. And I'm not saying it's going to work or it's not going to work. I'm just saying people seem so definitive about this for so many years. And maybe part of it was because of how good Brady has played. And we say, oh, man, this guy's so unbelievable. I mean, if they lost him, they're in trouble. Well, now they've lost him. So I really thought nationwide it'd be like 80-20. I really do. I thought like 80% of the people would say, nah, this team's done. Sick of forking him.
I actually thought that locally there might be more no votes than yes.
Yeah, I'm a little bit, I don't want to say surprised, because I think the fans here, they support the team. I'm a little surprised at the optimism. I thought a lot of people would be sort of jumping ship at this point and thinking that it's over. Because a lot of people, John, because during the preseason, they were ripping Castle. People were killing Castle. This kid can't throw. Look at his performance in this preseason game. He's terrible. They cut the wrong mat. That was what we heard a lot of. They cut the wrong mat. They must have read the sheet wrong. How could you cut Gutierrez? He outplayed Castle. And now all of a sudden, Castle's the guy, and everything's okay. See, I see a little bit of a contradiction there, to be honest with you.
Which is also kind of odd, because one of the other questions on the Sports Nation poll is which quarterback would give the Patriots the best chance for success? Matt Castle, Dante Culpepper, Joey Harrington, Tim Rattay.
Joey Harrington.
Tim Rattay and Chris Sims. Of course, Sims is out of the equation because he's just been signed by Tennessee.
Right.
So,
what were the results of that poll?
Matt Castle took 51% of the vote.
All right.
Culpepper was second at 32%.
Yeah, and you factor in that there were five guys in the poll. 32% think Dante Culpepper could come in here. I mean, has anybody watched the last couple of years of Culpepper? He can't move anymore.
He doesn't have the mobility. And, of course, Tom Brady was one of the leaders in the NFL in absorbing hits in the backfield.
Yeah.
I know that's been that really has kind of gone under the table here with three offensive linemen making the Pro Bowl last year. But Tom Brady's taken as many hits as just about any other quarterback in the NFL. So if you have Culpepper back there, he's dead meat.
Oh, he'll get killed. He just can't move anymore, John. And you know something? I understand he and Randy Moss had a nice thing, but that was 10 years ago. 1998. Yeah. It's 2008.
Yeah.
Okay? It's not the same. No. It's not the same.
See, the problem is the Culpepper's absorbed way too many hits in that 10 years' time.
there's a reason why he was out there and nobody was picking him up.
All right.
That's the reason why all these guys are out there, John. There's a reason why they're on the couch.
Yeah, well, Chris Sims picked up a job now. One ex-Texas quarterback backing up another one, I guess, at Tennessee. The question of the day has to do with perception in the NFL, in particular in the AFC. So this is one I want to throw out to our emailers today. We always try to come up with a question of the day to keep everybody somewhat engaged in the overall topic of conversation. And by the way, you and anybody else, you're all welcome to just, you know, basically fire off whatever's on your mind about the team, about the National Football League, whatever's up there, even if it's not what we're discussing. That's the way this thing rolls. It's sort of a, you know, open forum type situation. But I always try to put in one sort of a focal point to the day, or at least to the opening of the conversation for every show during the course of the week. Now, if not the Patriots, which team would you consider the favorite in the AFC? Now, I know many Patriots fans still think, well, I don't think we're out of it. And we discussed that yesterday. And in fact, many emailers came through yesterday and thought very much that. You know, upon further reflection, maybe I'm being a little bit hasty about this team. Well, the Sports Nation poll also had that question on top of it. I'll hold off giving that result for the moment. But right at about 50,000 respondents again, nationwide, to this question, which team is now the favorite in the AFC? Without Tom Brady as quarterback of the Patriots. I would ask you.
Yes.
And this is what I want to ask our emailers. webradio@patriots.com. Which team do you consider to be, if not the Patriots, which team do you consider to be the favorite in the AFC? What do you think, Mike?
Well, at the beginning of the season, regardless of Brady going down, I picked the San Diego Chargers to come out of the AFC, and I will stick with that. Okay. I believe they're the most balanced team offensively. I like Phillip Rivers. I have a lot of respect for Phillip Rivers after his performance last year in the AFC title game, playing practically on one leg, and I thought played pretty darn well, too, and had some pretty gutty performances that entire postseason. And I like the defense. I know Merriman's not there, but this is a team that's got, it seems like, 90 Pro Bowlers, and so now they have 89. You know, they're minus one guy. And I understand a lot focuses on what he can do, but they have some really good pass rushers on that team. And I just like the look. I like the schedule they have. It's they've had some difficult games, but I think it's advantageous for them. Not even with losing this first game, I'm not off the bandwagon yet, and I'm not really on the bandwagon, but I'm just saying that that was my pick. You know, they lost kind of a fluke game. Nine times out of ten, they would win that game by two touchdowns. They had a lot of bad breaks. Yeah, they had some bad breaks go their way, and give Carolina credit. You know, Delhomme playing his first game made a nice comeback, too. I would go with San Diego. A lot of people like Indianapolis. I think Indianapolis may be slipping a little bit. I kind of feel like their window is starting to close a little bit. And we'll see how Manning can respond to the offseason and the lack of activity and shake that rust off and when he does. But right now, I like San Diego.
Well, that's the question I'm asking everybody. If not the Patriots, then which team in your mind is the favorite, should be the favorite in the AFC? Webradio at Patriots.com. That's our question of the day today here inside the Patriots Playbook. And I'll give you what the Sports Nation poll has to say coming up in just a little bit. There were two other questions as part of the poll that I also thought were pretty interesting and that I wanted to share with you. Number one, it says, how many more Super Bowl titles will Tom Brady win? And there were about 33,000 respondents to this one. But the majority, 43%, said zero. Zero.
These are hard questions, John. I mean, I don't know how many more years he's going to play, first of all. There are so many extenuating circumstances.
How old is Tom?
Good
he's
question.
30 what? 31?
30 about, yeah.
Right around there. Okay. You got to figure that if he comes back relatively healthy, and certainly I think he's going to come back with some sort of vigor from this season, having basically now going to sit out the entire year.
Yeah,
I think he's got at least one left in him somewhere, somehow. He's going to play to 35 or 36 years old, you would like to think, barring any further injury. So I would think one, and that was the next number. 34% said one. The other question is, which player would be the biggest loss for his league if he were to sustain a season-ending injury? Football was represented by Tom Brady. The NHL was represented by Sidney Crosby.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron James represented the NBA. Alex Rodriguez was in there for Major League Baseball. And they also had one more football player in there because I think if they lost him, it would be enormous, and that's Peyton Manning.
Not
quite Klecko. But I thought that was a sort of a good thought-provoking question.
I think that the question about whose loss would hurt the league most,
right?
I think I would go with Sidney Crosby because the NHL is far worse off than the other leagues.
And they need
Crosby to really revitalize things. If all of a sudden he's gone, now the NHL's in really
That's true, but a lot of naysayers, Mike, would say nobody cares. It's hockey.
Well, but that see, with that attitude, then you might as well not even try. I mean,
they
are trying hard to market him, and I think they have gotten some fans back. And you know what? Maybe the casual fan will watch a Penguins game on NBC on a Saturday afternoon, and if Crosby's not there, now nobody's going to watch. The NFL is a pretty big conglomerate right now. You lose one guy, the league's going to go on. I mean, no disrespect to Tom Brady, but people are treating this like, you know, Roger Goodell died. You know, I mean, the backlash, like, oh, my God, the league, you know, what's this going to do for the league? The league's going to go on. They're going to keep playing games next week, okay?
They're all going to go on.
They're all going to play on Sunday.
The
NFL's not hurting for publicity. They're not reaching out because they have to draw in casual fans. The NFL has it all right now. They've got it. The NBA and the NHL, not so much. And the NHL, far less than the NBA. The NBA is making a nice comeback, and LeBron and guys that have helped. I think LeBron would be second on that list. I think baseball and NFL are the two sports that are the most well-off right now, and they could survive the loss of such a player.
You want to know what the poll says?
I'm probably going to say it. I bet they say LeBron.
He was tied for first.
Yeah.
LeBron James was tied for first with Tom Brady.
Yeah.
33%. A full one-third of the respondents said Tom Brady is the biggest loss for the NFL, And the other, and another third said LeBron James, biggest loss for the NBA. The other three respondents combined for 33%. Crosby had 18%, Peyton Manning 14%, and A-Rod just 1%.
Surprised that A-Rod was picked as the guy for baseball. And I'm a Yankee fan, but I don't look at him as the face of Major League Baseball. Maybe
who
it's
is the
just,
face of Major League
it's a good
Baseball?
Good question, though. See, that's the thing.
I don't
you
think
really
they
can't,
have one.
Yeah, so maybe you could just pick any guy. I think he's the best player in the game. But that doesn't always mean you're the face of the league, being the best player.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
Because I think, personally, I think Kobe Bryant's the best player in the NBA, but LeBron is the far more marketable candidate right now.
Right now.
And Kobe's
absolutely.
Got some issues that people don't some kind of skirt away from that a little bit. But right. LeBron is this pristine character and this young gun. So, that's a good question. I couldn't really tell you who the face of baseball is, but I don't know if it's A-Rod. But that's an interesting poll, though, John.
Yeah, some good stuff, which is why I wanted to share it today. And you have your chance to respond to our question of the day. If not the Patriots, which team is now the favorite, in your estimation, in the AFC? Webradio@patriots.com is the email address. We're going to take a time out here. We're going to let Mike share some emails with us from earlier in PFW in Progress. If those of you that didn't get your questions in on the program, we can fill in those. And we'll also have these questions as well coming up. Coming up in hour number two of our program, we will hear the conference calls today with both Brett Favre and with Jets head coach Eric Mangini. That's all straight ahead as we continue Inside the Playbook.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, Off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriots-place.com for more information, and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins. When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sack Attack sausages, First Down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sack Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, First Down Franks, and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's, and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine, and Associate Grocers of New England, and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Taylor on the turn, takes a touch, and there is it! 1-0 Reds! The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet. The Reds have the lead. Taylor Twellman just made 30,000 plus here at Gillette Stadium. Very happy.
2008 New England Revolution gear is here at the Revolution Pro Shop at Patriot Place. Located right next to Gillette Stadium, the Revolution Pro Shop has all of the official Revolution merchandise you'll ever need. Get the new 2008 home and away jerseys with name and number of your favorite player, or have one customized with your own name and number. Jackets, sweatshirts, hats, tees, and much more. With a huge selection of Revolution items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Revolution Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Revolution Pro Shop at Patriot Place is open 7 days a week and always available online at www.revolutionsoccer.net. Get the gear your favorite player wears on the field at the Revolution Pro Shop.
This is former quarterback Steve Grogan
and former linebacker Steve Nelson.
We want to tell you about the game with the greats.
Are you one of those old diehard fans who remembers our playing days? like the 1985 Super Bowl or the snowplow kick.
Maybe you just want to meet the newest members of the Patriot Hall of Fame, like Ben Coates or my good friend Stanley Morgan.
And Andre Tippett, one of my linebacking brothers. He'll be there too.
You think he'll bring his gold jacket with him?
I hope so. I can't wait to see it on him.
If you're a big-time fan, you won't want to miss the Game with the Greats. It's happening on October 5th at Gillette Stadium when the current Patriots are away at San Francisco.
Get your tickets now at patriots.com/alumni.
Hey, that's pretty good, huh, Steve?
Yeah, we still got it. We should call ESPN. We could be the next Mike and Mike.
Continue on a Wednesday. The email address again, webradio@patriots.com. John Rook joined by Mike Parenti of Patriots Football Weekly till 3 o'clock. And then after the 3 o'clock Eastern Time hour arrives, we'll get into the conference calls today with the opponents. That, of course, being the New York Jets. Patriots playing at the Jets this next Sunday afternoon in Game 2 of the 2008 regular season. We'll have Eric Mangini. We'll have Brett Favre for you coming up in hour number 2 of the program. So all that's still to come. One other thing that I wanted to kind of point out in terms of the injury situation and how Tom Brady's injury has caused fans everywhere, certainly Patriots fans, but fans everywhere to sort of reassess where their own team's fortunes lie in terms of the National Football League. I was reading Dan Wetzel from Yahoo Sports, and he thought that Brady's injury made the Dallas Cowboys the absolute shoe-in team to beat for the Super Bowl. Now, our question of the day, of course, has been concerning more about the AFC conference in particular. Because that, of course, Patriots can't do anything about the NFC. But in terms of team to beat overall, Super Bowl caliber, he says it's the Dallas Cowboys. Now, frankly, I came into the season, Mike, thinking, well, you know, the Patriots have to be considered the favorite in the AFC. But in the NFC, I liked the Cowboys then. I still like the Cowboys now. Maybe the Cowboys are the team to beat overall in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm with you, too, because I picked the Cowboys to win it all at the start of the year. And obviously, I had them beating San Diego. So this injury to Tom Brady does nothing really to change that. And if you had a pick and you had Patriots over Cowboys in the Super Bowl, now you might change your mind and you make it out to be the Cowboys as the team to beat. I think there are a lot of teams right now, and obviously mostly on the AFC side of the ball because that's who competes against New England. But they see this injury, now they think to themselves, we have a chance now. Teams that might not have had a shot, like the Jets, have a shot in the AFC East, and maybe Buffalo is a surprise team. And maybe some of those teams from the North and the South and the West can come out and feel like, we get into the playoffs now, especially San Diego, who has lost to New England each of the last 2 years in the postseason. Must feel like, wow, we have a chance maybe to get over the hump in the playoffs finally if we don't have to face New England. So there are a lot of teams that are in that boat right now.
Yeah. One of the telling quotes, though, that really struck me in Wetzel's article was he had a quote in there from linebacker Brady James, who said, Tom Brady is the reigning MVP, and that's for a reason. I'm sure he'll be missed on that team. One thing about New England is they have enough talent and experience to rise up. Now, that seems to be the common perception amongst the players in and around the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Wetzel, though, followed that up by saying, actually, they probably don't. As good as the supporting cast is in New England, it was Brady who made it work. The Patriots held on to beat Kansas City, but the long-term prognosis is completely altered. The ugly truth of the injury is the road to the championship has become easier for every contender. Now, I get the distinct impression, just from what I've read over the last couple of days since Tom went down, that there was an overall feeling of I'm not even sure what the right adjective to put in here is, but I don't know if it was disrespect or what. But let's just say the national media, I don't think, was as solid on the Patriots as maybe Patriots fans and even we were. And I don't know if that's just because the Patriots have won so much or if they really thought that the Patriots roster wasn't as good. And I found that a little surprising.
Well, all of a sudden, though, now, John, if you look at and if you listen to some of the talk in the aftermath of Brady's injury, a lot of people are saying this team's still going to make the playoffs. A lot of people. I haven't heard too much negative backlash coming from anybody, maybe other than Deion Sanders on NFL Network, who said, stick a fork in him.
Yeah,
but everybody's been pretty supportive here. I mean, and that goes nationwide, too. So I don't want to really hear the disrespect card too much because I'm not seeing it right now. I'm not really hearing it. I'm hearing a lot of people putting the trust in Belichick and saying he will find a way to get it done. And I think it's a different take now, and a lot of people have compared it to 2001. It's a whole different scenario. In 2001, this team was coming off a 5-11 season, had already lost its first two games. Belichick had not won three Super Bowls. There was no history in New England to draw from. This team was still, I don't want to say a dweller, but this was not a successful franchise like it is now. You fast forward 7 years later, it's 2008. You're coming off a 16-0 season. You've got three Super Bowls in the bank. The same coach on the sideline who won those three titles. So now people see Brady go down and think, okay, you know what? We've lost a lot of guys in the past. Maybe we can find a way to fill in the blanks again and get it done a second time or a third time. I don't really see too much negative. I don't see too much backlash coming nationwide. I see a lot of people kind of support
this
team.
I think it's been a little cyclical because I think initially the thought was the Patriots were done, stick a fork in them, like you said, Deion Sanders said. But I think now that people have had a chance to reflect, I think most are kind of coming back to the process that we spoke about on our program here yesterday was, you know what, let's give some credit to the other 52 guys on this roster because it's not all Tom Brady. Otherwise, you're doing a great disservice to these guys, and that was what I thought and still think to this day. The Patriots will use as their quote-unquote disrespect card. They always come up with something.
Oh, they'll find something, even if it's really not there, they'll find something.
Exactly. They manufacture it, which is what they're very good at doing. And, of course, Coach Belichick has been a mastermind at manufacturing, you know, perceived slides and slaps in the face. And I think that's the card that this team will play, that you are not well enough thought of without Tom Brady on this team.
I mean, there are ways to supplement the loss of Brady, and I think what they're going to have to do is run a more ball control, running game-oriented style kind of offense.
If they stay healthy, there's no reason they can't do that.
No, they have five running backs, and these guys are here for a reason, so it's time to put this plan to use. You kept those guys for a reason. And the defense has to step up and carry the team. Last year, the offense carried the team all the way to the Super Bowl,
now the defense has to
do it. And this has to be like, and this is what's going to be written in PFW this week, this has to be like 2003, back when this team had the homeland defense and they had Ted Washington at the nose tackle. They made T-shirts for it and everything. This was the most dominant defense in the NFL. They had three shutouts at Gillette Stadium over the final 2 months of the season. They took over games, and you knew, even in a game like against Cleveland, they won that game 9-3. One touchdown would have given the Browns a win, but you knew watching the game, Cleveland was not going to get in the end zone. And that was a team that would establish and set the tone defensively from the start. And this team has to start doing the same thing now. Now it's up to them. You come out, get a couple of three and outs, put the pressure on the opposing team. Because you're not going to get those 28-0 leads as like you did last year. It's a different ballgame now.
I thought this team at least looked like it was capable of doing just that this past week against Kansas City, save for, you know, the big pass at the end of Darling. I really thought that the defense played pretty well. Now, again, I'm trying to take into consideration the opponent in Kansas City, but I actually thought Kansas City was more dangerous offensively with Hewitt at quarterback than Brody Croyle ever was.
I agree
so
with that, too.
In that regard, I saw some things that I liked. I did see, and one thing I'm totally convinced of, that this secondary will not be maligned as much as it possibly could be, provided the pass rush remains consistent on the opposing quarterback. They must make that secondary better by getting pressure on the opposing QB.
Yeah, I thought they did a nice job Sunday stopping the run. Larry Johnson and Jamaal Charles really got nothing going in the ground game.
Right.
But I was a little bit disturbed toward the end that they gave, and this goes to the offense too, that they gave Kansas City three chances in the fourth quarter to either pull ahead or tie the game.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the breakdown on DeVar Darling's 68-yard catch, James Sanders took the wrong angle. That's a bad play at that time of the game. It took Delta O'Neal coming out of nowhere, a la Ben Watson in Denver in the playoffs, to track him down from almost the other end of the field and save a touchdown because the other guys behind him were jogging, and that's not good either. I saw two or three guys at least just jogging as if the play were over, and Delta O'Neal busts his tail and gets down there. Now, there's good and bad there. Okay, that's the bad. The good is you had first and goal at the five, and they put together a very good goal line stand, reminiscent of the one in Indianapolis back in 03, or back in 04, rather.
Great red zone stop, absolutely.
So, I mean, there's a little bit of both. There are some concerns still that I have, and then I saw some positives. And the biggest positive would be the red zone defense, because that was a big, big problem last year. Teams got in the 20, and they punched it in, and they scored. And that's going to have to be one of the points of emphasis this year. Go back to 2001, that bend-but-don't-break mentality, where they gave up a lot of yards, but when teams got inside the 20, they could not get it in. And that's what this team has to reestablish now. So that's a small positive step in the right direction from Sunday.
You know, I'm looking at the depth chart for this week already, and I have to admit, I'm not entirely surprised here, but I wouldn't be at all. I think Delta O'Neill. I was a little surprised that Lewis Sanders got the start at corner, and I would not be surprised if that changed. If it wasn't O'Neill, then maybe Wheatley. In fact, I think most of us thought that Wheatley would probably get the start this last week, didn't you?
Yeah, I don't know what happened there because they cut the guy that was ahead of him in Fernando Bryant, and that kind of, to me, was an indication that Terrence Wheatley was the guy.
Why Lewis Sanders then at the end?
I think, well, Belichick kind of alluded to that today and I think kind of made a mention of the experience factor in the preseason and maybe the fact that Lewis Sanders is a 9-year veteran. But if you're going based on just experience from the start of camp until now, he and Wheatley had the same experience. Wheatley was out there the whole time. So my guess is that Sanders did something on the field or in the preseason games that Belichick liked more than Wheatley. Now, we never had any indication of what Wheatley did wrong, and we were trying to talk about this on PFW in Progress and try to figure out what did Wheatley do to lose that job, because I thought it was his job. Now, but I don't think Sanders is going to stick the whole year. I think, and again, Bill alluded to this today, that Delta O'Neill has some catching up to do, and once he catches up, could maybe expand that role. So I think in a couple of weeks, you might see Delta O'Neill.
Well, that's what I think. That's exactly where I was going. In fact, I think it could happen. I don't know if it'll happen as soon as this week, but I think he'll get significant time based on just the flashes that we saw of him. Plus, he was in there returning punts as well for the end of the game, which I thought was a little surprising.
That's a big part of it and probably a reason why he's here over Fernando Bryant, because I wasn't sure that one player was really that much better than the other. But if they have a role for Delta O'Neill on special teams and punt returns, then I can kind of see it because Fernando Bryant did not have a role on special teams.
Is that more, do you think, returning punts for O'Neill? Is that more because they like him doing that, or is that more because they're giving Wes Welker still a chance to kind of heal up from that surgery he had in the offseason?
Well, I think it's both because Welker was returning the punts in the preseason, and that's how he got hurt. He got hurt returning a punt. It was an ill-advised catch along the sideline, and he got hit, and he paid the price for it. See, my guess, and I kind of look at this the same way I look at Ellis Hobbs at returning kicks, because we all thought that his role would be replaced as well. Mm-hmm. And Hobbs had two serious injuries last year. Maybe they want to lessen the workload and keep his body a little bit more fresh. The thing with Welker now, you don't have the same depth at wide receiver that you had last year. You don't have a Dante Stallworth as your number three. You now have Jabbar Gaffney. And behind Jabbar Gaffney, there's not much else. So can you really afford to stretch Welker too thin? Maybe that's part of it too. Because I don't think from a production standpoint that Welker did anything to necessarily lose that job either. I think maybe they just want to take it easy on some of the big-time players that they really need. And it's no coincidence that at wide receiver and cornerback, you're looking at two positions where they don't have a ton of depth. So maybe that's a part of it.
Yeah, it's got to be a part of it. I mean, I'm trying to think of another reason why these guys wouldn't have the...
You know, perhaps Delta O'Neill, he has experience doing this, and probably more so than Welker, so maybe he's the guy they slide in. The kick return game is going to be interesting because Matthew Slater did not make a positive first impression Sunday, muffing his first attempt, and he was out of there right after that. And Ellis Hobbs had a big one on the 51-yarder in the second half. So now you wonder, as he moved ahead, are they going to stick with Ellis Hobbs until something else happens? But I thought, you know, I was kind of under the impression that Hobbs wasn't going to do it because of his injuries last year. But now it appears that he might be the guy. They may not have a choice.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting scenario. All right, webradio@patriots.com is the email address again. Our question of the day having to do with the Patriots and who you think, if not the Patriots, should be considered the favorite in the AFC this year with Brady's injury going down. You want to jump back into some emails that maybe you didn't get to earlier?
Yes, well, we have some that were in response to the questions from those Sports Nation polls.
Fire away.
Our buddy TG in NJ says, "Hey, Mike and Mother's Basement Guy. On the AFC favorite question, what about the Broncos? Surprise?"
You know, a little bit. I have to admit, a little bit. I didn't watch much of the game the other night, I'll be honest with you. I was doing some other things, but I watched bits and pieces of it. I saw that Denver was way up, and then I got up early in the morning and saw the final score, and I'm like, wow, are the Broncos really that good, or is Oakland still really that bad? And I thought maybe just a little bit of both.
Probably more so Oakland. See, I'm concerned about the Denver defensive line and that defense in general. I think Cutler's a lot better than some people give him credit for.
Yeah.
But, you know, if the Patriots are knocked down a peg, maybe the Broncos could slide in. I didn't have high hopes for them. I don't think I even put them in the playoffs, to be honest with you. But our buddy TG from NJ also says Barry Bonds is the face of baseball, by the way.
No way.
Yeah, I don't think he didn't play. He didn't play last year.
He didn't even play this year. How is he the face of baseball?
he might be
the face that you put on a dartboard for baseball, but other than that, I mean, come on. Get real.
We've got another email from our pal Howard.
Yep.
Howard says San Diego, simply because they will learn from last year, and Brady, no, I said the player, not his team, will not be there in the AFC Championship to knock them out. And then he says, number two, I think this is the question in response to which player's loss would impact the sport more. He says, definitely one for Brady. No, I'm sorry. This is in response to how many rings for Brady.
Okay.
Definitely one for Brady, most likely 2 to 3.
Well, one was zero was the most popular answer, yeah. as I mentioned, but one was the next most popular. In fact, when I voted to get the numbers, because you got to vote to get the numbers, right?
That's right.
When I voted, I put one down. Okay. I voted one. I think that he's got one more in him somehow, some way. You know, as long as he comes back relatively healthy this year, I think he's got at least one, but that's the answer that I gave.
I'll tell you what scares me about that thing, John, is that the assumption that because he will be motivated to come back, that it's a given he will return to form. I think you have to understand, physically, can he do it? That's the biggest concern, because a lot of guys will try to come back from that injury. Now, granted, some of them are more mobile players at positions where the mobility is more necessary than a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough, John. I mean, he could be as motivated as he wants to be. If his body does not respond, then, you know, it's going to be hard. And that's the big concern. I mean, the good news, I guess, the silver lining is that this happened in week one. So he's going to get a full year.
Yeah, he's got a full year to rehab.
And he should be, I mean, by week one next year.
Hey, maybe this means, Mike, we'll actually see him in the preseason next year.
Hey, you know what? He could use the snaps, let's be honest, right?
He could use the snaps, that's right. And here's the other thing. I think it's a pretty safe bet we'll see him wear a brace on that left knee.
Yeah. Yeah, that's going to be a new thing now.
Because I actually heard, what I thought was a ridiculous comment that, you know, his knee injury could have been avoided had he worn a brace on his left knee, like a lot of quarterbacks do as a precaution.
Yeah,
and I'm like,
so
nah, I don't think so. I think once you get hurt, could it have possibly helped save some of the severity? Maybe. But most people I talk to, and I know this because I've had my left knee torn up, if it does save anything, it's very little. It might save you a little cartilage.
Other than that,
when the ligament goes, it goes.
Also here, James in Roanoke Rapids says, the team I feel has jumped to the top in the AFC since Brady has lost for the season is the Pittsburgh Steelers. And in the NFC, I see the Dallas Cowboys. Another thing, since the Patriots have done a good job on defense against Brett Favre the last few times we have played against him, what makes everyone think he is now better since he has joined the Jets? Do the Jets conform to Favre's way of playing, or does Favre conform to the way the Jets want him to play?
I think that's a good question.
Which one of these do you think makes the Jets a team that can beat even a Brady-less Patriots team?
I think the Jets would have to conform to the way Favre plays. I think that's actually a great question.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, I'm listening to the press conference earlier, and you'll get a sense of this, I think, but not entirely when we do Favre's conference call, because obviously it's members of the Patriots media generally that do the question, ask the questions here. But listening to Favre's press conference earlier today on Sportsnet New York, New York media believes that the Jets should be the favorite in the AFC East. And I'm like, really? And Favre, to his credit, did a tremendous job of downplaying all of that. I mean, he was so cool. And now I really realized again why I actually like Brett Favre, because he said the exact right thing that any Patriots fan certainly would want to hear. It's kind of like, well, listen, they're still the kingpins, and until you beat them, they deserve to be the favorite, and they deserve to be the champ, and nobody's beaten them. And just because one guy goes down doesn't mean that automatically elevates everybody else. We still have a long way to go here. Mm-hmm. And he said all the right things. In fact, they're all factual. I mean, it was all correct in what he said. You know, he said, we're still trying to get used to each other here, and I'm paraphrasing now, but that sort of goes to what was just said right there by the emailer. I mean, the Jets have to bring their game up to Favre's level to have a chance here is what I think. Now, there will be a lot of emotion, I think, here early. You know, the fans will certainly be into it on Sunday, because this is like, you know, the Patriots are going to be like swimming in the shark tank, and they're going to be, you know, they got a bloody leg, right?
Yeah.
And the sharks are going to be circling, and they're going to be cut out for blood. But if the Patriots can survive the first quarter and still be either relatively even or just a little bit behind or even a little bit ahead, I think they'll be in fine shape. I really do. I just, you know, it sounds like we're getting ready to game plan here for a playoff game. But fact is that, you know, if you can absorb the initial body blows and get rid of the emotion, get it out of the way, and just get to blocking and tackling and making plays, when you line these two teams up man for man, the Patriots, you win.
Well, here's the thing, though, too, John. This is now Matt Castle's first start. First NFL start, first start since high school, and he's doing it at Giants Stadium in front of what's going to be a pretty hostile crowd and a fired-up crowd for Brett Favre's New York regular season debut. Those two factors are going to be tough to overcome. Plus, what the emailer fails to mention is that now you're taking the Eric Mangini 3-4 defense, which by all accounts is an improved defense with Chris Jenkins at nose tackle, and now they're going to throw some different looks at Castle. This is not going to be the same as facing the Kansas City defense, which was a lot more vanilla in comparison to what the Jets are probably going to throw at Castle.
That's a great point.
There just are so many factors that add up for this game. This is a real tough one. Does this mean they're better in the long run? Not necessarily. But for this week right now, to me, the Jets are should be the favorite. I'm surprised that New England is still a road favorite, given everything that has gone down in the last...
What, are the odds changed today?
Are they a favorite?
No, the Jets were 2.5 points.
I'm sorry. Okay, you know I screwed that up then. Okay, well then I guess I'm not that surprised at all.
Well, here's the thing though. Yeah, it started at 3.5, then it slid to 2.5.
Okay, all right. Okay, I had heard it wrong, and I was a little bit surprised.
It was my understanding.
Well, what it tells me now though is that already the money is on the Patriots because it's already slid 1 point.
Right, right.
And when you consider that the NFL home field advantage is usually worth a field goal, and you put these two teams on an even keel, the Patriots are still considered a slight favorite.
Well, you know, at the quarterback position, the Jets clearly have an edge right now.
Kind of. But then again, this is where you go and you find out what you have built around that quarterback and whether or not your depth and your support system is such that, you know, your team can play well. I mean, you know, it goes to any game on the road. If the Patriots, you know, don't turn the ball over and have a chance to, you know, play stout defense and force Favre into some mistakes, they should be fine. They should be fine. Again, we have to wait and see how the execution goes. But, you know, it's so – I said this yesterday, Mike. It's so early in the season. Even if the Patriots lose this game, and yes, admittedly, they could lose this game. Even if they do, it doesn't mean everything's over and that you should just cash in your chips and wait till next year.
No, they come home after this and play Miami. So
right. There's a chance to
all
get healthy
things considered. and then they get a bye week. And you know something, that may not even be too much of bad timing for the bye. Get another week to kind of get Castle up to speed with everything he needs to know. This may not be so bad after all. So you could be looking at 2-1 going into October. It could be worse if that's what it is.
Well, I think that was one of the questions that one of our emailers yesterday said, what do you think they'll be? Will they be 3-0, 2-1, or 1-2 going into the bye week? And I said, well, I'm going to hedge, and I'll say 2-1. But then again, upon further reflection now, I really think this team can be 3-0 going into the bye week. Now, again, provided they have to make sure that they stay away from other injuries. If they lose a Seymour, or if they lose a Bruschi defensively, or something like that, then you're still talking about quite a bit to overcome here. But if they can stay relatively healthy and they can stay relatively mistake-free, and I realize that may be a lot to ask, but if they can do that, I have all the faith in the world that this team has enough talent built around Matt Castle to still be effective. Will they score 30 points a game? No. But will they be in the game and have a chance to win the game? They should.
Well, my biggest thing about this week was I thought this was a tough game even before Brady got hurt.
Because of Favre's presence?
Favre's presence, being in New York, the energy level. I think that the Jets possibly feeding off that for a couple of series could make a factor early in the game. And I think the Jets are an improved team. I think they made so many moves in the offseason from a team that went 4-12 that it would almost be impossible if all of them failed. You know, it's somewhere something has to work out. And I think where it's really going to work out is at the defensive line. And you saw what they did to Ricky Williams and Ronnie Brown Sunday in Miami, held those two to 50 yards. And that's something the Jets could not do last year. They could not stop the run. And already through 1 week, we've seen some improvement. Just like we saw some improvement in New England's red zone defense, we've seen some improvement in the Jets' run defense.
Yeah, Mark Canizero from the New York Post yesterday mentioned that he thought Chris Jenkins was easily the best offseason, not the best offseason acquisition. Here's, paying a little tribute to Brett Favre, but he thought it was one of the most underrated offseason acquisitions, and the fact that Jenkins has completely transformed that front. And so the thought process was for this week's game, the Jets are just going to load up and just dare Matt Castle to beat them.
I probably would too, because I expect him to come out and run the football, so I'm going to stack 8 men in the box. And if Castle starts completing some throws, now I have to readjust. But, you know, Mangini is certainly not afraid to do that and also take some chances. So, we'll see what happens. It'll be fun.
All right. Mike, thanks for being around for the first hour. Certainly appreciate it. Great to visit with you
again. Thank you, John. Yes.
We'll knock heads again very soon, I'm sure.
All right, John.
Hour number two of Patriots Playbook. We'll continue with your emails. The question of the day, if not the Patriots, which team do you favor as the favorite in the AFC? Plus, we'll get into our conference calls with Brett Favre and Eric Mangini of the JETS. Jets, Jets, Jets. Coming up,
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, Off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day at Patriot Place. Everyone wins. When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Taylor on the turn, takes a touch, and buries it! 1-0 Reds! The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet. The Reds have the lead. Taylor Twellman just made 30,000 plus here at Gillette Stadium. Very happy.
2008 New England Revolution gear is here at the Revolution Pro Shop at Patriot Place. Located right next to Gillette Stadium, the Revolution Pro Shop has all of the official Revolution merchandise you'll ever need. Get the new 2008 home and away jerseys with name and number of your favorite player, or have one customized with your own name and number. Jackets, sweatshirts, hats, tees, and much more. With a huge selection of Revolution items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Revolution Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Revolution Pro Shop at Patriot Place is open 7 days a week and always available online at www.revolutionsoccer.net. Get the gear your favorite player wears on the field at the Revolution Pro Shop.
This is former quarterback Steve Grogan
and former linebacker Steve Nelson.
We want to tell you about the game with the greats.
Are you one of those old diehard fans who remembers their playing days, like the 1985 Super Bowl or the snowplow kick?
Maybe you just want to meet the newest members of the Patriot Hall of Fame, like Ben Coates or my good friend Stanley Morgan.
And Andre Tippett, one of my linebacking brothers. He'll be there too.
You think he'll bring his gold jacket with him?
I hope so. I can't wait to see it on him.
If you're a big-time fan, you won't want to miss the Game with the Greats. It's happening on October 5th at Gillette Stadium when the current Patriots are away at San Francisco.
Get your tickets now at patriots.com/alumni.
Hey, that's pretty good, huh, Steve?
Yeah, we still got it. We should call ESPN. We could be the next Mike and Mike.
Hour number two, Inside Patriots Playbook for a Wednesday. My name is John Rook. Web radio at patriots.com is the email address. That's how you reach us. Thanks again to Mike Parenti for joining us here. And just for those of you who are still kind of getting used to the show and maybe not have had a chance to listen to Patriots Playbook in years past, again, as we mentioned yesterday, this is our eighth year to do the program to follow up, at least during the football season. When we're in season, we follow up on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays in behind the PFW in progress, guys. But on Tuesdays, will normally be joined by Brian Lowe, who will be doing the Fantasy Lowdown show on Thursdays as well. And, of course, Brian Lowe, for many of you that are familiar with Patriots.com, is the host of Patriots Today with Christina Acra. Wednesdays, Mike Parenti from Patriots Football Weekly will join us. And on Thursdays, Eric Scalavino from PFW will join us as well. Just to kind of give a little bit of a different insight and a little bit of a flavor of the PFW guys in our program, because they actually do, and they are in the locker room every day, talking to the guys every day, hearing the stories, still mingling with the media, getting some of the other thoughts and conversations going on. And that's kind of my role. That's been my role for the 8 years that we've done this show, as someone who's covered this football team for the last 20 years. I have a lot of other duties within the media. I call college football. I call college basketball. I do a lot of other different things. And get to travel somewhat and get to hear what other people have to say about our stories and about our problems. And that's one of the great things I like, is to hear other perspectives and how we're treated and how we're thought of outside of our own little insular world here in New England. And, of course, those of you who are Patriots fans but living outside of New England, we consider you part of Patriots Nation. That's why, of course, you're listening to a program like this, because you want to be a part of it, even though you may live in Timbuktu or Afghanistan or wherever, which is, of course, where we've had emails from. I don't know if we've ever had one from Timbuktu, though, but, you know, that's a goal. We'll have to put that up as a goal. Fact is that the overwhelming perception, I had a friend of mine who lives in San Antonio, college buddy of mine, who emailed me right after Brady went down, and he said, "Wow, I guess the season's over, huh?" That was the initial perception, and I think that was the initial perception for just about everybody. Oh God, the season's over, Patriot fan or not. And then you have to reflect on it. You have to give it a chance. You don't want to just react in the heat of the moment, because chances are, very strongly, I think, you know, 8-9 times out of 10, you're going to retract your statement, because you have to give it some reflection. And I think after we've given it now a couple of days and we look back on it, I think more and more Patriots fans are feeling, if not overtly optimistic about the season, they're feeling at least a little more comfortable in what the season might still hold. And we did talk about this a little bit on yesterday's show, when, in fact, you know, we talked about perceptions and how they might change because of a catastrophic injury like the Patriots have suffered. And, you know, and so the question of the day yesterday was, you know, what do you think the Patriots' record will be now that Brady is out? And how does it differ from what you originally thought this team would do? And most people that responded yesterday were only a game or two off of what their original projection was for this team. In my own personal instance, I said 13-3 before the season started, and I thought that might be on the low side, but I said 13-3 because I, you know, honestly, I didn't really think that they would get close to going undefeated this year again anyway. It's just so incredibly hard to do. And then I'm saying now I think 11-5 is certainly within the realm of possibility. And so that's different by two games. Now, that doesn't mean that Tom Brady himself is really worth two wins. He actually could be worth a lot more. But I'm trying to give credit where I feel credit should be due to this football team. That this team is good enough, built around Matt Castle now, where they can still be competitive, and no, they won't win too many games 49-7. But at the same time, that 49-7 win might be 24-14 or something, you know, and it's still a win. It goes down as a win. And that's the bottom line. It has to, you know, as long as it's a win, that's all that matters once the regular season is over. And so today's question of the day is, what team should be, or do you consider the favorite in the AFC now that the Patriots have lost Tom Brady? It was a poll question on the ESPN Sports Nation poll. And while I'm interested to hear what you have to say, you can send me the email, webradio@patriots.com. 43% of the respondents, as of just a couple of moments ago, and the vote total is now approaching right at 50,000 for this particular question. 43% say the Steelers should be considered the favorite in the AFC now that the Patriots have lost Tom Brady. I can't imagine before week one that would have been the answer. I think it's because the Steelers were so impressive in their opening win that most people feel like, oh, you know, they've got to be it. I mean, the Steelers, they've got it all going again. Before week one, I don't see that happen. I think you'd probably have the Colts, followed by the Chargers, and then the Jaguars in that order before the Steelers would have ever even shown a blip. But that's all due to week one's games. The other teams in the Sports Nation poll, in case you're interested, Chargers were second, but way behind at 16%. The Colts were third at 14%. The Jags were 3%. Other, in other words, a team other than the Steelers, Jags, Colts, or Chargers, other got 24% of the vote. Indicates to me that, for the most part, many fans do see this now as a wide-open field. So I'm sure, as a part of that other, the Bills got some votes. I'm sure the Denver Broncos got their share of votes. Maybe even the Tennessee Titans got their share of votes. Maybe the New York Jets got their share of votes as well. Wide open is what I think the thought process is. By the way, did you see, I don't know, I saw it on ESPN earlier today. I don't know if the NFL Network had a spot on it, and I think I saw it on the wire somewhere where a fan, I think it's a Steelers fan, is producing the Marcus Pollard T-shirts. The fan club, right? Doing the T-shirts that has a Brady's jersey and a circle with a line through it type of thing as a way of thanking him for giving them renewed faith or renewed hope for the football season. I mean, you know, certainly not exactly a tasteful thing, but, yeah, they're selling T-shirts now, the Pollard fan club, for taking down and taking out Tom Brady. I don't know if you saw that or not, but I just thought that was sort of – just kind of struck me as, you know, perception – It may not really be real, but perception is, of course, everything. And the perception is that there were a lot of Patriot/Tom Brady haters out there. I know a lot of you have said embrace the hate in 08, which is still something I think you have to do, although I don't think you're going to get near as much hate for the Patriots now, simply because people aren't going to waste the time.
Embrace the hate in 08, baby.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that that's going to be there as much as maybe it was going to be there or was there a week ago. By the way, the other ESPN thing I wanted to bring up was the power rankings. You know, we like to have fun with those from time to time around here. Power rankings are a little bit different this week. The Patriots, of course, going into week one, were the overwhelming number one team in the NFL. Overwhelming. You probably knew that. You probably figured it. You might not have even looked at it. And several, you know, web publications, you know, have power rankings. ESPN does. NFL Network does. Yahoo, I think, does. SI does. They all do, right? Have their own version of who they think are the top-ranked teams in the National Football League. Well, Patriots slid all the way from number one to number nine this week in the power rankings. I can't say that that terribly, it really surprised me. I thought it would be more like about seven or so. I realize that you only go on a week-to-week basis and that most of these power rankings are supposed to be one single snapshot at a given moment. You're not supposed to take into consideration the fact that they're defending champs and that they should be given credit where credit is due and that the champs until being beat and yada, yada, yada. That is a snapshot of this team right now at this stage of the season. And they slipped all the way from number one to number nine. And so when you look at it that way, I'm like, okay, I guess I can understand that. I'm not terribly surprised. In fact, maybe I'm only mildly surprised they didn't slip lower, like 12 to 15. Because I'm not sure, as I mentioned earlier with Mike Parenti, I'm not sure that the rest of the league, at least media-wise, gives the Patriots enough credit for having a team built up around Matt Castle. Well, I think we're starting to see more and more evidence that I think people are realizing, you know what, they actually might not be that bad now. The Cowboys were the top-ranked team. They moved all the way from number three to number one this week. The Steelers were number two. The Chargers, at 0-1, were ranked third in the ESPN.com power ranking. I thought that was kind of ridiculous, especially now that they've lost Sean Merriman for the year. The Saints were 4, the Giants 5, Eagles 6, Packers 7, Colts 8. So Chargers and Colts at 0-1 were ranked ahead of the Patriots at 1-0. How about that? And the Steelers, Chargers, and Colts, three teams in the AFC, were ranked ahead of the Patriots at number 9. More NFC teams up at the top of the heap. Of course, the NFC had a two-win advantage over the AFC last week, I believe, overall. So the NFC, I did a good job of representing last week when it comes to, you know, interleague play. And maybe the tide is beginning to turn a little bit where that's concerned, especially with some of the injuries that we've seen. You know, who knows? It's certainly worth considering, I think, at this stage of the game. And the AFC won't stay, you know, a dominant league for an extended period of time. They actually already have. But the law of averages always catches up. Let's see if the law of averages can catch up with the New York Jets and make them a better team. And how much can Brett Favre, in particular, make them a better team? It was an interesting question we posed in the opening hour of the program today with Mike Parenti. I mean, does Favre make them a better team, or does this team rise up and become better because of Favre's mere presence? I think if this team is going to improve radically over the 4-12 team it was a year ago, the rest of the team has got to use Favre as a bench watermark and say, okay, I've got to improve my own game. I've got to come up to his level. And at least for week one, in a road win, yes, it was over Miami, but it was a win over the road on the road, 20-14. At least for week one, it would appear that at least they're on their way. Certainly an improved Jets team defensively against the run. I think that, as we talked about as well, is the one significant thing that you can physically tell from the Jets, on top of getting some pretty solid play quarterback as well. Although I was one of those that always did like Chad Pennington. I thought Pennington was a true thorn in the Patriots' side over the years. But Favre, you'd have to say, still overall is a bit of an improvement there. All right, let's get into the conference calls. We have both Brett Favre and Eric Mangini. Let's lead it off. Which one do we want to lead it off with, Gary? Okay, I think that's a good idea, too, since we've been talking about him. Let's start it off with Brett Favre with members of the Patriots media via the conference call earlier today.
Personal reaction to what happened, and then what was your sort of professional reaction to what's happened as far as what it means for the Jets?
I didn't really have a personal. I mean, of course, I know Tom. The last time I talked with him, he called me last year when I broke the record for touchdown passes and congratulated me. And, our relationship was really nothing more than that, but I got a tremendous amount of respect for him and what he's done, and, you know, felt bad for him. I mean, that's one of those injuries, you know, it's a freak injury. It can happen to anyone, but, you know, the thing is, a guy who's been that steady and consistent for a long time, and I know that people think, oh, okay, Tom's down. Wow, this team's in trouble. How many times have we seen this with the Patriots? Now, I know it's Tom, but, you know, well, that's the same thing I said with Bledsoe. You can't replace Tom. It's not going to happen. Guy's been outstanding, but you can't overcome. And that was really my professional reaction. I mean, you know, it's a shame. It's unfortunate, but they'll be fine. I mean, they've always been fine. And when he comes back, he'll be as good as ever.
Brett, being with the Jets, you bring to them a certain philosophy in how you've played your football. They have a certain offensive philosophy. How is it that you meshed both? I mean, do they have to – have they brought in some things or done some things to go with what you are as a quarterback, and do you have to do some things as a quarterback to go with what their offensive philosophy is?
I think both. I think there's a meet in the middle philosophy here. They obviously made a trade for me because of the way I played over my career and the fact that they still think I can play at a high level, which I believe too. This offense is obviously different from what I'm used to. And I've got 17 years under my belt of something totally different. So, and talking with Mike Tannenbaum through this whole process, you know, he's like, Brett, you know, we're making this deal for you because you will make plays that, maybe other guys obviously wouldn't attempt. And we're willing to take that chance. I mean, we're hoping to take it to the next level. You know, and the thing is, I mean, I'm not saying that that's right or wrong. I think I give him credit, whether it's me or someone else, that he is willing to take that chance, and this team is willing to take that chance. you know. And so that's all I can offer. And I think Eric and I have had this conversation numerous times, and Brian Schottenheimer. I'm going to do whatever it takes to win. And in some ways, that game the other day was a perfect example of that. I didn't play very well from an overall standpoint. It was enough to win. I have to play much better. I'm still learning this offense, and we're trying to scale back but also add at the same time, if that makes sense, how we're trying to call things and make it simpler for me to leave the huddle and know what we're doing and focus more on what they're doing. And that's kind of been the problem we face with, because we're having to do it. I mean, we're playing regular season games right now. But in that process, what I get from our guys here is, Brett, play your game. Whatever that may be, play your game. Obviously, the little things that you hear week in, week out, take care of the ball, you know, calculated risk, know when not to do certain things, all hold true. I don't even need to be told that. They all hold true. But also, Brett, play your game. And so that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, the last thing I want to do is come here, obviously, and play bad, poorly. I want to give this team the best chance to win, whatever that may take.
Brett, I know you don't want to give away secrets to the other opposition here, but as a quarterback, what kind of advice would you give to Matt Castle going into his first start? And, you know, obviously the nerves are going to be there. It's a big divisional game on the road. And what do you remember of when you were first thrust into your position with the Packers when Majewski went down?
Well, I don't think I'm in a position really to give Matt Castle that much advice. I think he's following in the footsteps of somebody who's been pretty damn good. And he obviously handled himself well the other day. So he's probably going to tell you guys he's ready. He's worked for this opportunity, and that's all true. And I think he'll do fine. But like for me, I think every guy who's ever had their first start, there was no person that I can think of who was ever more raw than me. I mean, I'd never really played in a passing offense. I was always in an option style offense and was asked to do things that normal starting quarterbacks in this league were never asked to do. I blocked and it just, you name it. And so, I was really learning on the run. I had a lot of talent, but was very raw. Didn't know how to use it. I mean, to me, if a guy was double covered or triple covered, it didn't matter. I could throw it through him. And, you know, I mean, the precision part of my game didn't come till later, where I started just kind of reading defenses and looking at it from a different perspective. And a lot of that was due to Mike Holmgren. But I think Matt Castle is ready to accept this role. I think he did great the other day, and I don't see any reason why he doesn't continue to play well.
Right, quickly, and obviously a final question, and we know you have to run. What's your thoughts about the Patriots defense that you're going to go against on Sunday?
I think they're damn good. We played them a couple of years ago in Green Bay. I didn't make it to halftime, but, you know, it goes without saying that Vrabel and Teddy and Rodney make that defense go, as far as, you know, knowing the scheme, getting guys lined up, the savviness. I mean, it's outstanding. But they're front guys, and I know AD is a friend of mine and Southern Miss guy, hell of a player. And it goes on down the line. I mean, their defensive line is as good as anybody in football. And not to mention they have probably the smartest defense in football. And, you know, you're not going to outsmart them. You got to outplay them. That's easier said than done.
Thanks, Brett.
Okay, guys.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, so there's Brett Favre on the conference call with members of the Patriots media earlier today at Gillette Stadium. We'll hear from Jets head coach Eric Mangini coming up in just a little bit. Web radio at Patriots.com as we continue here inside the playbook for a Wednesday. Just to kind of recap some of the other things that we've been talking about, first and foremost was on the ESPN.com poll today, where about 43% of the respondents said that they thought the Steelers would be considered the favorite now in the AFC. If you agree or disagree with that particular assessment, and which team do you think, if not the Patriots, should be considered the favorite in the AFC now? Webradio at Patriots.com is the email address where you can send your answer. To that end, get this email from Al, who says the Patriots should still be the favorite in the AFC. They have a better defense than the other teams. They are always at the top or near the top of the league in points allowed and total yards given up. The offensive system is still in place, and you have the best receivers in the league. Castle can manage a game and avoid turnovers. All of the running backs could start for another team. We have two solid tight ends and a strong O-line. The DBs will be solid this year with Capers as the coach. So Al obviously is clearly in the Patriots' corner where that's concerned. This one comes from a friend Dagmar in Miami who says, John, the last time I wrote was before the Super Bowl. A lot of things have happened since then, but definitely Brady's loss is the biggest disappointment. I think this is a true test for the Patriots' system, and I have high expectations about this team. Yes, Brady is out, but who knows whatever else may happen. Maybe the Colts have a horrible season. Maybe San Diego, too. Who knows what may happen with Pittsburgh? If I have to pick a team other than my Patriots in the AFC, I would say Pittsburgh, and in the NFC, I would say Cowboys. All right, there you go, Dagmar. Thank you. You know, I don't think I would have chosen Pittsburgh. Even in light of their, you know, week one win, I just don't think I would have chosen Pittsburgh. I would think that if not the Patriots in the AFC, I think the team that I most likely would have gone with would have been the Colts. And again, I realize that Peyton Manning didn't play a lick in the preseason either because of his, you know, knee situation. And yes, the Colts looked fairly mediocre, if not downright miserable, in their opening loss on Sunday night to the Chicago Bears. And by the way, the Bears looked way better than I thought they were capable of playing, especially with Orton at quarterback. But, hey, you know, let's give them some credit. Anyway, I still think the Colts will be there at the end. I think San Diego will probably be competitive, although I do think missing Merriman will cost them somewhat defensively. But they have not changed that much offensively, although I think they'll also miss Michael Turner, who's now making a name for himself in Atlanta. I think Pittsburgh has an opportunity to sneak in there, but I don't think they'd be considered the team to beat. You know, in a sense, I think Al's right. The Patriots should still be the team to beat. Until someone beats them, they're still the team to beat. That makes perfect sense. Logically, that's the answer. But if not the Patriots, then who? Well, I'm still going to go with the Indianapolis Colts. Even, I was surprised to see what I did on Sunday. I'd still have to say the Colts. That would be my selection. Provided they don't take any more hits injury-wise. I just think, you know, the Colts, they played the preseason similarly to the Patriots. Not very impressive. Saved a lot of bodies. Maybe that caused them to be a little bit down. Maybe Chicago is just more motivated. Who knows? Because of the Super Bowl a couple years. Who knows? Who knows how much that actually has a factor? I really don't read a lot into that, but who knows? It's one game. It's a mere blip on the radar right now. Now, if we see, you know, the Colts continue to trend here over the next week or two, well, then obviously we'd reassess. But I still think the Colts would have to be considered right up there with the Patriots and everybody else in the AFC. That's kind of where I'm coming from. And you have your chance to come from a certain direction as well if you want to contribute to the program, webradio@patriots.com. A lot of other football news today that either directly or certainly indirectly would affect the Patriots on the field, opponents, possible future opponents, perception, strength, injuries all over the league. The Jacksonville Jaguars have had, you know, Brad Meester out for weeks, their center. Vince Manuai was on IR, got put on IR earlier this week. Starting guard Mo Williams was placed on IR today. So there's three big losses for the Jacksonville Jaguars, and a team that also is thought of highly, I think, in preseason mode in the AFC has taken not one, not two, but three pretty good socks to the gut. Maybe not as significant as Tom Brady going down, but let's face it, that's significant nevertheless. We also mentioned that Marcus Colston is going to be out 4 to 6 weeks for the New Orleans Saints after having some finger surgery, and I think the Washington Redskins, who have to play them this week, are probably cheering that particular thought. So 4 to 6 weeks, though, on Colston's injury might be optimistic, according to ProFootballTalk.com today. Alex Smith is Smith's career as quarterback with the San Francisco 49ers, they're saying, is unofficially over. The team announced today, 49ers did, that Smith has been placed on IR with a shoulder injury that he suffered in practice last Friday. So my guess would be that, if he's done for the year, they probably won't keep him around next year because of his salary, which will be astronomical. So I would say that, yeah, he probably is done as a member of the San Francisco 49ers. Here's another story that came out. By the way, the 49ers today, because of Smith being placed on IR, 49ers have signed Jamie Martin, who will serve as the third-string quarterback behind JT O'Sullivan and Sean Hill. I know that strikes fear into the hearts of 49er opponents everywhere, but Jamie Martin was a pickup today by the 49ers, and of course the 49ers will be a Patriots opponent coming up the opening weekend, I believe, of October. The Colts had Ed Johnson, defensive tackle, arrested early this morning for marijuana possession. I don't know if you saw that or not. And no other word other than when it happened or how it happened. It's just he was arrested early in the morning for marijuana possession. So I find that kind of interesting. The Tennessee Titans did sign free agent quarterback Chris Sims today. He was alleged to have been in Foxborough a couple of days ago. And while he did make an appearance in Foxborough, he was not signed to anything, nor was he worked out by the Patriots on Monday. And because of Vince Young's precarious situation where he's going to miss anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks with a sprained knee ligament, and, of course, all the things that were going on with his, I guess, his mental stability over the last day or so, strange stuff. One ex-Texas quarterback is now going to try to fill in the gap for another ex-Texas quarterback, as Chris Sims has been signed to be a backup for the Tennessee Titans. Let's see what else we have in terms of signings. And injuries. Sean Jones from the Cleveland Browns, he's going to have arthroscopic surgery on his right knee, so the Browns safety is going to be out, it says here, several weeks. The Cleveland Plain Dealer is reporting that he's going to miss several weeks, although it's not really known how many weeks several will be. But Sean Jones looks like he's going to miss some time now for the Cleveland Browns. Do we have any others here? I think that pretty much covered it in terms of the injuries and such today. Patriots, of course, as we mentioned, did bring back and re-sign Matt Gutierrez to the team today. Has been signed to the practice squad officially, so he can be the third QB. Seattle. Rob Sims, guard, torn pec muscle. Looks like he could be gone for the year. We mentioned Colston. Mentioned Vince Young out today as well. Let's see. Where else? I guess that pretty much catches us up on the injuries. I did want to follow up, though, on the whole Bernard Pollard story. I know Vince Wilfork has been somewhat vocal, at least in the locker room, to some members of the Patriots media over his displeasure at Pollard not being, I guess, fined or at least punished in some form or fashion, like he was for what he thought was a similar injury a year ago, a similar hit a year ago. Everybody has their own opinion on whether or not Pollard's hit on Tom Brady was illegal or dirty or not necessary. I've looked at it several times, many times, so many times now that I don't like to look at it anymore. Being a victim of a knee injury many, many years ago, it always makes my joints, twinge just a little bit when I see somebody else having something like that happen to them. I don't think it was an illegal hit per se, although if you look at the rule, anything below the legs or below the knees is supposed to be considered illegal. He was more blocked into Brady by Sammy Morris, if you look at it on videotape. And he was merely reaching out and trying to grab for Tom, which is a player who's on his way down toward the ground. Instinctively, that's what you're going to do. You're trying to make a play. And so because he's reaching and trying to make a play and got blocked into him, he ends up clipping, if you will, Tom. And that's why Tom landed awkwardly and tore his knee. And so I think it's hard to see or hard to say that he did something that would be considered illegal. And I, in a sense, see where Vince Wilfork has a right to be somewhat upset. It's not going to change anything, but I can understand his point of view. And I mentioned in the opening hour of the program today that Pollard, in particular, has got a Bernard Pollard fan club. I said Marcus earlier. It's Bernard Pollard, Marcus Pollard. Got tight ends on the brain today. Bernard Pollard, as a fan club, Pittsburgh Steelers fans in particular, who are selling shirts to do to basically celebrate Tom Brady going down. I don't know if you've seen the website. Actually, if you Google it, you can probably find it. But it's a T-shirt that says Bernard Pollard, and it has Brady's number 12 in the Patriots, you know, style of jersey, with a circle and a red line through it. It says Bernard Pollard Fan Club established September 7th, 2008. It says Bernard Carmel Pollard is an American football safety for the Kansas City Chiefs in the National Football League. I guess they must have gotten that from Wikipedia. It says on September 7th, 2008, Pollard was involved in a play that ended with New England Patriots quarterback Tom Brady being taken off the field with a knee injury and not returning for the rest of the game. It was later revealed that Pollard's hit on Brady most likely has ended the quarterback's season. To that end, they've come up with a red Bernard Pollard Fan Club T-shirt. The site, in case you're interested, is Believe Merch, MERCH.com. So, anyway, that's where we find it today. In case you're interested in that or you wanted to know what all the hubbub is about, that's pretty much where it's come from. I don't even want to say that it's classless, but it just goes to show you that there's always somebody out there, you know, trying to take advantage of other people's misfortune, I suppose, in this particular instance. So I would say just kind of, you know, hey, enjoy while you can. Enjoy while you can. Be interesting to see how that one particularly plays out. Webradio at patriots.com is the email address. A couple of minutes left here before we'll wrap up the program with Eric Mangini. The Jets head coach, and let you listen into his particular conference call with members of the Patriots media. Tomorrow's program, on Thursdays, it's always been great. Last couple of years, for those that have been a part of the program on Thursdays, we managed to go around the NFL a little bit in addition to taking a little bit more of an X and O and in-depth look at the Patriots and their upcoming opponent, which, of course, in this case would be the Jets. But I'm pleased to announce that our good friend from ESPN is going to come back for next year, for this year, rather. And all of a sudden, Russell Baxter, what am I almost forgot there for a second. Russell Baxter, who is the NFL research coordinator for ESPN and their entire network, his one job is the NFL 365 days a year. That's all he does is the National Football League. He does stats, numbers, he does everything. Even in the dead of summer, he's working football at the Worldwide Leader. And Russell supplies a lot of the background information that the guys on the TV shows on Sunday, NFL Countdown, and the Sunday night shows and all this stuff. He's the one not only talking to them in their ears, feeding them all of the inside info and all of the stats and the knowledge and the trivial, you know, type of things that come up here. He's the one doing that, telling Chris Berman and telling Tom Jackson, this is the guy. He is in charge of all of the NFL research for the entire network. That would include radio and .com and everything else. And Russell has been a good friend of mine over the last decade through my time working at ESPN, and he is going to join us again on Thursdays this football season. So not only will we jump into the Patriots matchup for the particular week, but we'll take a quick look at some of the other big games around the National Football League on Thursdays for you here inside the playbook. And Russell will be with us generally around the 3 o'clock hour Eastern time every Thursday. Probably start a little bit early. I know that because he's got meetings and stuff he has to get to on Thursdays, we'll probably get to Russell about 2:45 Eastern time on Thursday. So if you want to tune in for that, that's what we'll get to. So Russell will be a part tomorrow. Eric Scalavino from Patriot Football Weekly will join us on Thursdays as well, and Eric will be in tomorrow. And we'll take a little bit more of an in-depth look, I think, at the Patriots and the Jets as well. All right, let's sneak in a quick little break here, and then we're going to come back and get you all caught up with Eric Mangini of the New York Jets right here inside the playbook.
This is former quarterback Steve Grogan
and former linebacker Steve Nelson.
We want to tell you about the game with the greats.
Are you one of those old diehard fans who remembers our playing days?
like the 1985 Super Bowl or the snowplow kick.
Maybe you just want to meet the newest members of the Patriot Hall of Fame, like Ben Coates or my good friend Stanley Morgan.
And Andre Tippett, one of my linebacking brothers. He'll be there too.
You think he'll bring his gold jacket with him?
I hope so. I can't wait to see it on him.
If you're a big-time fan, you won't want to miss the Game with the Greats. It's happening on October 5th at Gillette Stadium when the current Patriots are away at San Francisco.
Get your tickets now at patriots.com/alumni.
Hey, that's pretty good, huh, Steve?
Yeah, we still got it. We should call ESPN. We could be the next Mike and Mike.
When you've got a lineman-size hunger and want the awesome, authentic taste of Gillette Stadium at your tailgate or right at home, tackle that appetite with Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Try Sac Attack sausages, first down Franks, or Patriots brats in a wide variety of flavors at home, at the stadium, or at the game. And get your crowd cheering for Gridiron Grillers. They're great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are all you'll need for the perfect tailgate or home barbecue. Check out all of the Patriots Gridiron Grillers. Mild and hot Sac Attack sausages, Patriots cheese brats and beer brats, first down Franks and more. Patriots Gridiron Grillers go great on the grill. Gridiron Grillers are available at Big Y, Demoulas Market Basket, Hannaford, Johnny's Foodmaster, Roach Brothers Sudbury Farm, Shaw's and Stop and Shop, and distributed by Agar, Associated Grocers of Maine and Associate Grocers of New England and CNS Wholesale. Patriots Gridiron Grillers, when you just can't wait for Sunday.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas Tree Shops, Off-Broadway Shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant and bar, a four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and a long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
Turn, takes a touch, and buries it! 1-0 Reds! The sellout crowd in Foxborough rises to their feet. The Reds have the lead. Taylor Twellman just made 30,000 plus here at Gillette Stadium. Very happy.
2008 New England Revolution gear is here at the Revolution Pro Shop at Patriot Place. Located right next to Gillette Stadium, the Revolution Pro Shop has all of the official Revolution merchandise you'll ever need. Get the new 2008 home and away jerseys with name and number of your favorite player, or have one customized with your own name and number. Jackets, sweatshirts, hats, tees, and much more. With a huge selection of Revolution items for men, women, kids, and infants, the Revolution Pro Shop has something for everyone. The Revolution Pro Shop at Patriot Place is open 7 days a week and always available online at www.revolutionsoccer.net. Get the gear your favorite player wears on the field at the Revolution Pro Shop.
I want a team-first attitude where players are working for the name on the front of the jersey, not the name on the back of the jersey. Start
spreading the news. We got to play him one day at a time. I'm leaving
today. I think that if you want to be the best, you have to beat the best.
I want to be a part of it, New York.
I called every single play last year.
I'm just happy to be here. Hope I can help the ball club.
And if we can win this division, I think there's going to be some really good competition.
I just want to give it my best shot, and the good Lord willing, things will work out.
I want to thank my beautiful wife. Probably the best draft pick I've ever had. She makes me a better person. He's smart. He's really smart.
I think their defense is Del Rio. Top of the heap.
I called every single play last year.
Eric! You're going to give the company to Eric? He is a bad, bad man.
I'll make a brand new start of it.
in old New York.
But I'm not Bill Belichick, and I'm not Bill Parcells. I'm Eric Mangini.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
I called every single play last year.
Of course, Eric Mangini in many of those clips you just heard. Yep, he is the head coach of the New York Jets, and so, I'm sure that
you know his Mangenius.
He's a Jets coach, sweetie. I should go say hello.
Mangenius, whatever you want to call him. I know a lot of Patriots fans weren't too favorable, thinking too favorably of him when he did leave. But fact is that that's all water under the bridge now. And as we all try to move on here, he's the coach of the other guys, even though he spent quite a bit of time learning his trade from Bill Belichick. And I find it just kind of interesting that it somehow always turns around and now he's the favorite. But, of course, you know, when he's your coach, he's going to be the favorite in New York. John in South Carolina says, Pollard, by the way, was already on the ground, flat on his chest, got up, crawled, and grabbed for Brady's leg. Was the hit bad? No. But then again, neither was the Wilfork hit. I do not believe either hit was an attempt to take out a quarterback. I do not understand why Wilfork's hit was bad and Pollard's was clean. I think that's the problem, John, that most fans seem to be having. If Wilfork's was considered bad enough to fine, why wasn't Pollard's? Because Wilfork was blocked into, I don't know. Maybe it's because he was on his feet. I can't answer that question. I wish I could. I've kind of tussled with that one today and yesterday, and I can't come to any kind of a conclusion. That wouldn't probably be a good question to ask of somebody from the NFL. Maybe we'll get Russell Baxter's opinion on that one tomorrow. At any rate, that's, you know, it is what it is, and we kind of move on here. Notice that today from practice, Mike Reese on his blog had that Randy Moss was not in the media access portion of practice today. Neither was Jabari Gaffney, Ben Watson, and Sam Aiken. So the participation report, the injury report, the first one for the week should be coming out within the next 10 to 15 minutes. You can refresh your browser, and it will be posted here on Patriots.com. So if that is of importance to you, we'll make sure that you have it here on Patriots.com coming up in just a few minutes. In the meantime, let's go ahead and wrap up today's program by giving you a chance to listen in to Eric Mangini, formerly, of course, of the Patriots as a defensive coordinator and defensive back coach and longtime protege under Bill Belichick. And now, as the head coach in the New York Jets, he's got a unique challenge, I think, ahead of him. His team has gone from being an afterthought in a matter of weeks. His team has gone from being an afterthought and where maybe people are starting to doubt his ability to a team that some in the New York media believe should be considered the favorite in the AFC East based on the fact that Brett Favre has arrived offensively, and maybe perhaps based on partially on the fact that a guy like Chris Jenkins has really shored up, at least for 1 week anyway, the running game defensively for the Jets, and of course based on the fact that the Patriots have come back to the pack a little bit in the wake of Tom Brady's absence. So is Eric Mangini that much better a coach now than he was, say, 4 weeks ago before any of this took place?
He's smart. He's really smart.
Okay, maybe he's smart. Maybe he's also lucky. And maybe this team,
and mixing a salad.
And maybe this team, that's true. I heard that comment more than once last year about Mangini. Maybe this team actually is a little bit better than we originally thought they would be. They'll grab Patriots fans' attention if they win this Sunday at Giants Stadium. Don't forget, same patch time, same patch channel tomorrow, 2 p.m. Eastern time, more Inside the Playbook. Russell Baxter will join us. Eric Scalavino from PFW will join us as well.
I've got to tell you, though, I've been hooked on the Olympics.
He has been. We'll see if he's still hooked on the Olympics. Here's the head coach of the New York Jets, Eric Mangini.
Hello, Eric.
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, how are you? Good. How different is your week down there with getting ready for Matt Cassel instead of Tom Brady?
The week hasn't really dramatically shifted. Obviously things are going to change in terms of the style, his style versus Tom's style, and and you can never really replace a player of Tom's caliber, but I think that that offensive system is loaded and very efficient. I thought that Matt came in and did a great job and hitting the 51-yarder from backed up shows how confident they are in him, and then touchdown to Moss, 13 for 18, 112 quarterback rating. I thought Matt did a really good job, and knowing Matt from being there, I know how hard he's worked in his role as a backup, so I assume he'll be extremely efficient.
Eric, do you have to gear your offense toward what Brett Favre can do, or does Brett Favre have to gear his game to what your offense is?
Well, what we try to do each week is be able to play to our strengths and be able to attack our opponent's weaknesses. And one of the things that we've focused on and worked with Brett on is trying to incorporate all the different things that we'd like to do in terms of going into a game plan. Obviously, he was behind when he came in terms of the overall playbook, but you never use the whole playbook going any given week anyways, and then you focus on the plays that you're going to run that week. And there's been some give and take in terms of terminology, but it's been positive. There's so many of our ex-players that at other teams that we needed to change some of the wording anyways, and that was something that was lined up to do prior to the start of the season.
So in layman's terms, it's basically a mixing of philosophies. Your philosophy goes toward him a little bit. His philosophy has to go toward you.
Yeah, and the one thing that with as many years as Brett's played, he's pretty much seen all the different concepts. You know, he's there for the invention of the forward pass. I mean, he's played so long that the words may be a little bit different, but he's been exposed to a lot of it, a lot of things that we do, and I'd say 90% of the things that we do, maybe there's a few things that are a little bit different. It's just how you call it and how you get to it.
How about the chemistry with him and Coles, with Lavernius having missed a lot of time? And I know he only had one catch in the opener. How's that working?
It's been, I think their relationship since Brett has gotten here has been really good. And obviously Lavernius was very close to Chad and I respect that and Brett respects that. But Lavernius has been fantastic, and it's not a function of, him comparing the two quarterbacks. He's been extremely, good working with Brett, and as we get him on the field more and more, I think the timing and the on-field chemistry will continue to improve as well.
Coach, when it comes to working with Brett, what's been the biggest surprise for you?
I didn't have any set expectations going into it. Obviously, respected him tremendously as a player. Didn't know him that well as a person. Got to know him. One of the things that's been very impressive is his approach and his daily approach. He studies extremely hard, and a good example is I was talking to the team and went through the special teams keys last week to win the game, and then the next day I asked Brett what they were, and he was able to rattle them off without any problem. He's a guy that on outside runs or reverses or any of those types of plays, he wants to get out in front and lead the pack. He works with the show team guys to make sure that they're giving the best look possible. He's getting together with the defensive guys. He's not, solely focused on offense. He's just a down-to-earth guy, and for such an impressive resume, it's easy to understand why he's been so successful for so long and such a good teammate.
How's the new look offensive line working? You guys spent a lot of money on it in the offseason. You happy with the way Allen and Damian are meshing?
I think Allen and Damian have been great. I think they've been great both in terms of what they personally can do on the field, but also in terms of their contributions in the room, their work with some of our younger players, the way that they've meshed. Allen got voted as one of our captains, which gives you an indication of his relationship with the rest of the team. It's pretty hard thing to do. And I think that Bill Callahan has done an excellent job as well. He's a guy that's been a head coach in the league, head coach in college football, an offensive coordinator, and he sees things from a big picture perspective. BDN is a great technician with the offensive line and the little details, and both those things have shown up on the field.
Eric, without Brady being there, does that at all change how you defend Moss? It just seemed like they had such a symbiotic relationship.
I'll tell you what, Moss is tough to cover regardless of who's throwing him the ball, and best example is the 51-yarder that he caught. You know, there when they're backed up, and he's an explosive player. That Tom and he had a great chemistry, but I can't imagine he's going to be that much less explosive now.
What Dwight Lowry, the rookie? Do you think he's going to start again in week two, and how? How would you grade his performance in week one?
I thought he did a really good job, and I think that he has a very good perspective on things in terms of understanding that this is a higher level, but at the end of the day, it's just football, and it's the things that he's been doing his whole career extremely well. And having Geno start as a rookie and Asante play as much as he did early on, other rookies that I've been a part of who started, Revis, things like that, there's a lot of similar characteristics in terms of the approach to the game.
Hey, Eric, do you take anything from having been around Castle when he was a rookie, and maybe Daboll having been around him for a couple of years?
There's some familiarity there, but guys change and guys grow and they develop, and I think a good example of that is, you know, Tom's growth from his rookie year to his second year, and even Brett Ratliff here, who really struggled as a rookie calling a play in the huddle, and then when he did get a play out, usually he fumbled the snap, and now a year later he's like a different guy. And I think that's true with a lot of players. If you just keep working at it and plugging away, there's going to be tremendous growth, and I think Matt's grown quite a bit.
Speaking of growth, Eric, what kind of growth have you seen from Vernon Golston from the preseason to now?
Well, Vernon was a little bit behind the eight ball because of the NCAA rule. He couldn't come in until his class graduated, so he missed almost all the OTAs, and then he was a little bit late coming into camp, so he missed some time there. And I think that's why Dustin Keller's further ahead than he is, because of sheer reps and experience. The one thing that I like about Vernon is he is building, and each week I see some real progress. And it's going to take time with any rookie, and especially when you're making a position change from having your hand in the dirt to standing up.
How much does Chris Jenkins alter your run defense?
I thought Chris did a really nice job against Miami. He's a big, powerful man that's athletic, and he does a nice job finishing on plays. I was really happy with what he did in the middle this past game, and also some of the things that we talked about in terms of what they were going to try to do against us and his awareness of those things, I was happy with as well.
You've gone from a team that was 4-12 last year and is in the same city as the Super Bowl champions, suddenly having a Hall of Fame quarterback and having the best player, arguably, in football in your division out of the picture now. That's a pretty meteoric rise in terms of how people perceive you from the outside. Have you had to address that with your team, to talk about how expectations have ramped up so much and how you deal with that?
No. One of the things that we consistently talk about, and did it my first year, talked about it my second year, and really talked about it my third year, is that it's not really about external factors and external expectations, and I appreciate the excitement. I appreciate all those things, but what matters is what we do collectively. And I've seen that over and over again throughout my time in the NFL, where expectations have no correlation to results. But what does have a correlation is focus and work and preparation.
What do you guys take from the end of that game against Miami and being able to kind of hold off Pennington at the end?
There are a lot of things that we need to improve on. And I was pleased with the win, but there are a lot of things situationally that we could do better. And that's always a consistent challenge when you win, to make sure that you don't gloss over the things that need to get taken care of. Just like when you lose, you don't harp on things more than they need to be harped on. The key thing is consistency and getting the corrections made so that the next week you're better prepared when those situations come up.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, guys.